Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Tadatad aham ishasya.
Tadatad aham ishasya.
I took this as the special mercy of the Lord, who always desires benediction for his devotees, and so thinking, I started for the month. Confidential devotees of the Lord see in every step a benedictory direction of the Lord. What is considered to be an odd or difficult moment in the mundane sense is accepted as special mercy of the Lord. Mundane prosperity is a kind of material fever, and by the grace of the Lord, the temperature of this material fever is gradually diminished, and spiritual health is attained step by step. Mundane people misunderstand it.
Thank you. Who here knows Narada Muni? Who here knows who Narada Muni is?
Personally.
Who here has met Narada Muni? Okay, so for some of us, this is the first time hearing his story. So he's telling the story of how he got to where he's at right now. And he's describing how this adversity happened when he was only 5 years old. His mother was bitten by a serpent, and she was going out to milk a cow. So they lived a very simple life. She was a maidservant, and she was going to milk a cow, and she got bitten by a serpent, and she passed away. So imagine at 5 years old, your mother dies. Like, what a setback, right? What a material setback. And he took it as an opportunity to say, okay, he took it actually as a special mercy of the Lord and as an impetus to progress in spiritual life, which is an incredible feat for such a young child. What to speak of us right now as older people, to just use these opportunities that come up in our lives to take shelter of Krishna. That's the whole point. The Bhagavatam is actually like a life manual. And if you study it that way, you think, okay, let me learn what lessons is the Bhagavatam teaching me. And over you'll see these stories where devotees have things happen to devotees that seem like disasters or troubles, difficulties. And if we study it and by looking at how they respond to those situations, then we can actually learn how to do that in our own lives. We can take guidance and inspiration from how they do it. So, who here has ever had a material setback? Who here has never had a material setback? There's always one person who does that.
That's your
Okay. Yeah, so... So all of us are very familiar with that experience of, especially, and it's mostly noticeable when we're feeling really happy about life, right? When something's going really well, and then a setback becomes really obvious when you think, okay, now I have my whole life planned, everything's going great, everything's lining up the way it should, and then something happens. And that really feels like a setback because of the polarity of this comfort of the material world with something that's going wrong, right? So, is anybody familiar with that experience? That they think things are, finally things are together, everything's lined up, have my life together. So, we're all familiar with this, so it's a very, it's helpful that we can all share that experience, and then we can all take guidance from the Bhagavatam, and we can share with each other the devotees' experiences of these moments. What did and what do devotees do when they meet calamities or difficult moments. And for each one of us, that's going to look a little different, right? So for one person, a setback will be something like, I can't sharpen my pencil. And they're like, something simple like that. Like, oh, the test is coming up, and that's like a setback, right? For some, and so setbacks can vary in their intensity. But for a particular person, it might be very stressful at that moment, or their pencil's not sharpening. For another person, it might be that they just lost a loved one, and that's what they're dealing with right now. So in small ways, in big ways, we all have to deal with this continuously. And it comes up not just once a year, but it comes up almost every day. If we're reflective, we can realize, I was planning to go to, I was planning to be at my appointment at 9, but the car in front of me is driving really slowly, and so now I'm there at 9:05, so that was a setback, right? So it happens all the time because the nature of this material world is to remind us that this is not our comfortable home. So it's constantly, it's in the workings of this material nature. Here's a reminder. Don't get too comfy. And they're actually very helpful, these reminders. They keep us from getting comfortable in a world that's not our real home. For example, if we say you go to a doctor, right? And you're in the waiting room. And you know it's gonna be about an hour, because sometimes doctors run late. And you start to get very comfortable, right? You get your meal, maybe you have, like, you pull the table over, the one that has all the magazines on it, clear off the magazines, set a little tablecloth, put your meal on it, your cup, you get, like that. And it would start, at a certain point, you would start looking pretty ludicrous to the other patients in the room if you were getting your surroundings so comfortable like that, even though you're only there for, an hour max. So same example is often given with the train station or bus station, right? You're on your way to a destination or an airport. And I think about this when I travel, because we don't want to get very, like, super comfortable in that chair that we're sitting in before we go on our plane, right? We're ready to go. We're not investing so much energy into that, that place. Of course, the analogy is not... it's just an analogy. It's not completely applicable because we have to get comfortable enough in the world to do our service. So it's both simultaneously. But with the awareness that we're only here for a short time, and we shouldn't forget the goal. Don't get too cozy in this world. And that's why the world, Krishna designs the material world to keep reminding us, it's like grinding against us, like, this is not comfortable, right? Like, have you ever seen one of those rock tumblers? Where you put, so you put your rocks in there, and they start out all jagged and rough, and then with time, my mother used to, years ago, she worked at a store where they sold gems and minerals, so we had a little one at home, and we would see that, how they transformed into these beautiful, shiny, polished stones. And that's how the material world is, right? That's how it's a rock tumbler, like, and especially in our relationships, we see that tumbling us together. Oh, and there's like a lot of uncomfortable moments, but in the end, it's to transform us, it's to help us, give us an opportunity to come closer to Krishna, to purify the heart if we use it correctly to advance and to progress. We can also choose to just hang out here and get comfortable, but then Krishna reminds us in ways such as, what are the four troubles of this material world that everybody has?
Birth, age, disease.
Okay, say it again.
Birth, old age, disease.
Yeah. So starting with birth, and if any of you have seen a birth or have seen a movie where a birth is depicted, it's very difficult for both the mother and the child. The child is being, like, completely... it's a traumatic moment, and then through our life, there's a time period where if we're pretty healthy, our life can seem pretty good for a good chunk of time, and then we start maybe having diseases, and then we start getting old, and things start happening to our body. It's not as easy to stand up as easily, things like that. And then, and we're all going to go through that, and then at the end, we die. So it's a very, in one sense, it's a very grim tale for those who are not taking shelter of spiritual life, right?
Right.
It's a lot of people struggle with depression in this world. It's a very high rate of depression. And ironically, the rate of depression is extremely high in countries, the Western countries. They're supposedly comfortable places, right? Why do you think people struggle with depression so much? What is one of the reasons?
They're never working so hard, they're just going to die.
Yeah, there's yes. Mm-hmm.
Because the material happiness doesn't bring true happiness.
Uh-huh, yeah. So
they have all these things that they're comfortable with. And they have all these things that they think brings them happiness, but they still don't have the true happiness.
Yeah, exactly. And there's that unsettled feeling. The soul is feeling unsatisfied, right? And we're trying to put a Band-Aid on the wound, but it's not really solving the problem. And you're like, oh, I want to get a few more throw pillows for my couch. That'll make me happier, or whatever. But really, the soul is crying out for this relationship with Krishna. That's the hankering of the soul. That's what will make us happy. That's our real nature and our desire. But here we are in a world where it's very a self-absorbed world, where we learn to think about me and I, and we forget that actually we get the most happiness and the most satisfaction in that connection with Krishna, serving Krishna. It's all about Krishna, not about me. So we're in a perverted reflection world, and then therefore we're never satisfied. And depression often, there's many reasons for depression. It's not a light thing, but a depressive mood, I should say, not the condition of depression, but feeling down, feeling discouraged, right? That's something we're all familiar with. And it often happens when we face a material setback. Something happens in our life that stops us from enjoying or interrupts our flow. So we're all familiar with that. How do we use those to deepen our spiritual lives and come closer to Krishna? So that's the question, and we see that in Narada Muni. He's an amazing example at 5 years old. We also see that in the life of Srila Prabhupada. And in the song we sang, the Prabhupada's name is actually in the second line, Abhaya Charanaravinda. So that was his name. Growing up, his name was Abhaya Charan. And it's a very appropriate name for him, because he had, if you look at Prabhupada's life, there are repeated multiple material setbacks. And he faced his life with this mood of not being afraid, because he took shelter of Krishna. Abhaya Charanaravinda means one who's taken shelter of Krishna is no longer having fears, right? So abhaya is fear. It's one of the things that we all have in this material world. So Prabhupada's name was Abhaya, means fearless. So he had many material setbacks in his life. And if you look at it from a material point of view, you could say, oh, he had a failed career, right? If a materialist was looking at Prabhupada's material life, it would look like maybe a failure that way. Because he had a pharmaceutical business that didn't work well. Things were falling apart for him. He was trying to maintain his family. It was very difficult. Then his family was sort of a failure in the material sense, because some incompatibilities, and then his family wasn't interested in spiritual life, so it was very difficult for him. And his health, like Prabhupada's health when he was coming to America, suffered 2 heart attacks. You could say, oh, that's a material setback, right, for your health. So if you look at Prabhupada's life from a spiritual perspective, and I would like to open this up to all of you, how are these not material setbacks? How do you see that Prabhupada used these to actually, as a pure devotee, how did he use these material setbacks to transform them? Yes.
When the business failed, he was able to take up the order of his spiritual master and come here to such a human books.
Yeah, exactly. After some years, but yes, his business failing actually increased the impetus for him to get more involved in the spiritual activities and fall, eventually leading him to the falling of the spiritual master's order. Yeah.
I guess I was going to say a similar thing, but when because his family was so loose and they were in the spiritual life, and he was sort of unattached from it all, it was probably easier for him to like get away from that and focus on spiritual life eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So helping with the renunciation of this world through the difficulties. Very good point. Yes.
The heart attacks in the ship, I think, reminded him that he had no power to fulfill this on his own. You know, he was, I am so weak, I'm having these heart attacks, you know, he can hardly move or something, I don't know, but to then fully depend on Krishna, you know, there's no arrogance of, oh, I'm going to come over, I have these books I translated, you know. It was like, no, I'm weak, I'm powerless, you know, I'm having heart attacks, I'm an old man. So then he was forced to depend on Krishna.
Beautiful, yeah, and that was in that song that we talk about, often, Prabhupada's song when he arrived in that Boston Harbor. Where you can see that mood of surrender, Krishna, I'm a puppet. And we saw that in one of the verses, right? We're puppets we're either puppets of material nature, if we're in material focused, or we're puppets of Krishna, if we're in spiritual life. So Prabhupada had that mood of, here I am, I struggle through these heart attacks, this very difficult voyage, come to a land where I'm not sure people will accept me. And there's so many material setbacks in the starting of the Hare Krishna movement. But he used all of them to keep that mood, to keep going deeper in his spiritual life, turning to Krishna for help and for his to be used by Krishna.
I was thinking, if he hadn't gone through all that, you know, his business fell, disappointments with his family, his suffering heart attacks. Even when he came to America, it took him a really long time for him to really get anything going. It wouldn't have been really relatable to us, you know, because we hear in the shastras that, okay, for one who takes the Krishna consciousness, you know, he loses nothing, you know, Krishna gains everything. But, you know, like, we wouldn't have really, like, been able to actually see that, you know, like, we've been seeing Srila Prabhupada's life and seeing how Krishna just took care of him and actually gave him everything in the end. It helps us establish faith in this process.
That's really nice. Yeah, really good point. By seeing how devotees go through their lives, we actually deepen our own faith in spiritual life. That's such a nice, very good point.
There's an interesting setback in Prabhupada's life that we don't hear so often when he talks about in one lecture.
Yeah.
When he was a young man, he was selling chemicals for a family friend and doing very well. And then a rival company came and offered him an executive position. And he said, all I would have had to do was sit in an office and sign checks. He said, but I was young and a little puffed up. So I said, I'll work for you, but you must give me this and this and this. And they said, forget it. So if he had gotten, he was reflecting, if I had gotten that job, everything might have been different.
Yeah. That also helps us in our lives to, when we look back on our lives and we feel regret. Regret is often when we feel like, oh, I could have done that instead, right? Or I wish that had happened. But if we look back and see Krishna's plan leading up to where we are now, we can actually, in hindsight, see that everything was arranged. Like Prabhupada was saying, everything in that moment, when that happened, at the moment, Prabhupada might have felt disappointed that they didn't give him that job. Of course, we don't know the mind of a pure devotee, but basically, in our own lives, if we look back and go, oh, I didn't get that job, now I understand why, looking back on it years later, right? So that's one thing we can look forward to, is the hindsight realization of how Krishna led us to this point. Mm-hmm. Another great devotee that I find a lot of inspiration from is Queen Kunti. So this beautiful book has Prabhupada's lectures to the verses that she spoke to Krishna before he was about to leave. And there's that famous verse. The chapter is called Let There Be Calamities, right? So Queen Kunti was the mother of the Pandavas. Who here doesn't know who the Pandavas are? Anybody? So the Pandavas, so Arjuna, the Bhagavad Gita, him and his four brothers.
Yes.
So the Pandavas, yeah. So Kunti was their mother, and she went through many difficulties by, basically there was like royal conspiracies and a lot of fighting between these two royal families. So she was the mother of these five boys that they were, their rival cousins were trying to take over the throne, and then that's why the whole battle happened, right, in Bhagavad Gita. So long story short, she suffered in many ways, including they were banished to the forest, they were living in the forest, they were there were some cannibals in the story, pretty far out story. And then there was a time when they were put into a house of lack as their cousins, their evil cousins who were trying to take over the throne, Duryodhana and others. They put them in a house of lack, which is a type of wax, and it was like, oh, this is their holiday, go spend your holiday here, but it was actually going to be, it was a treason, like they're going to burn down the whole palace. So many things that they had to go through. And Queen Kunti was, when Krishna came to visit, she offered these prayers. So if any of you can get your hands on this or read it from the Bhagavatam, it's also in the Bhagavatam, in the first, actually we're going to be reading that soon, right?
Yep.
So in two chapters. So this verse says, I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again, for seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. So talk about a courageous prayer. Most of the times, when religious or spiritual people pray, it's to help get us out of calamities, right? Please, God, help me. My child's in the hospital. Please help, right? There's that. And it's not bad. It's fine to turn to God in all those moments. But this prayer is really, Chaitanya Charan used it, I think, shockingly courageous. He has these nice words that he uses. So to be able to say, Krishna, I'm willing to pile it on. I'm willing to take more suffering, because when I have these moments of suffering or turnbacks or letdowns or material setbacks, then I really take shelter of you. So another thing that Chaitanya Charan Prabhu said in this relation to this verse was, when we're going through life normally, when things are going well, Krishna consciousness is an opportunity, right? It's something we can do. It's something that we can turn to. But when we're going through difficulty and material setbacks, it turns from opportunity to necessity. And that's why it's Krishna's mercy. Because no longer is it just like, oh, it's optional, and today I feel like I'll, you know, chant a few extra rounds. But suddenly we're in this situation where it's a necessity. We need shelter, and we can't turn to anyone else. No one can help us. We look around and we realize, oh, everybody else is a fragile living entity in this world too, and we can't really take shelter from that. So we need to turn to Krishna, right? It's our shelter. That's the name Sharanagati in Sanskrit. Taking shelter, like that. Finding opportunities. And that's why Queen Kunti was saying she was at such an advanced level of spiritual life that she was realizing, actually, looking back on her experience, the time when they were burned and the building was burned, they had escaped, the time when they met these cannibals, the time when the food, things were poisoned and they were kicked out of the kingdom, all these lists of things that happened in this story that she went through with her sons. She's looking back on it and realizing, wow, all those times brought me so close to Krishna. And now I have a question for you. Because she is saying, this is a trick question, so she's saying that so that we could see you again and again. So my question is, for those of you who know the story, why is she saying that when in the story, in the pastimes that happened to her, Krishna wasn't always there when things bad happened? What does she mean by we could see you again and again? For example, when the house was burning, right? And they had to escape under a tunnel. Krishna wasn't there during that time. And there was other moments too where Krishna wasn't physically there. He was their cousin, but he wasn't there at every moment. So what does she mean with that? Animesh.
She probably remembers Krishna's name, and that's not different from Krishna. Mm. So that's one.
Yeah, that's a perfect answer. Yeah. There's no difference between Krishna and his name. So simply remembering, hey Govinda, hey Krishna, right? That calling out. That's Krishna's immediately there. And Prabhupada says in here, literally, let's see here if I can find it. So here, we may think that Krishna is far, far away, but in fact, Krishna is within us. He is far away, but at the same time, he is the nearest. So Krishna is the master of this, this and this, right? So Krishna can do simultaneously many things. So he is in the spiritual world, enjoying his pastimes, and simultaneously he's within our heart on our journeys, particularly watching over us and caring for us as we journey in this material world. But even if we think that Krishna is far, far away, his name is present. We can chant Hare Krishna, and Krishna will immediately become available. Krishna is available in this easy way, for which there are no hard and fast rules. We can chant at any time and immediately get Krishna. So that's exactly what Queen Kunti is saying. Her mind was on Krishna in those moments, therefore Krishna was with her. There's no difference. And as we progress in spiritual life, we realize that the whole purpose of spiritual life is an inner working, right? It's an inner world that's happening. Our relationship with Krishna becomes very, very internal, so that even if we're in an external situation where there are no photos, no paintings of Krishna, no books around, say we're in a, I don't know, what's a situation where?
Forest prison.
Kidnapped? Wow. Yeah. So difficult situation. In some countries, the devotees were actually in, like in Russian countries, during the communist time, they were actually tortured. They were taken to places where they were actually being tortured because of their spiritual lives, their faith in Krishna. So in those moments, when we don't see externally, like there are no devotees around, there are no pictures or deities, or then we have this whole inner world because we've been working on it, right? So in those situations, we'll be able to immediately take shelter of Krishna within our heart. And we'll realize, oh, he's there. He's been there with me this whole time. And chanting the holy name, even if it's done in the mind, is so powerful. So even if that, I think about this because I went through a phase where I used to read these books about concentration camps and how religious people would deal with these situations, right? There was a story, I forget the name actually, A Man Tortured for His Faith or something like that, a book. And it was about a Christian in Russia, in the Soviet Union. And it was very inspiring because no matter what they did to him, they forced him to do all kinds of things, right? But he would always, like even in his mind, he would be praying. And like, because they can't take that away, right? They could take away his, many of his physical and external things and force him to do different kinds of torturous things, but they couldn't take away the heart of a sincere person, or the mind that is focused on God. We can think of a perfect example for that in our literature. Who is that person that was put through all kinds of difficulties? Prahlad Maharaj, yeah. So in that painting, that little boy in the painting, 5 years old. I noticed a lot of them were five. Children in the Bhagavatam. Okay, the three of those. Narada, Vladruva. 5 years old. So Prahlad was put through all kinds of difficulties, but he kept using those as opportunities to turn to Krishna. So I want to ask, so some of you here, whoever feels like sharing, and very briefly, because we only have a few minutes left, but has there been a moment in your life when everything was crumbling or some big setback happened, some big disappointment, and you, looking back on it now, you realize, wow, that really brought me deeper in my spiritual life? One of the things we can remember throughout our lives is this promise in the Bhagavad Gita that the soul is never damaged or destroyed, right? Because we'll hear all kinds of horrible stories. Even if we hear, well, this devotee passed away, then our immediate tendency is to ask, oh, how? How did it happen? Which is okay, because we're curious beings, but really the important thing is to remember, it doesn't, the physical body doesn't really matter how that passed away, because what we know for sure is that the soul is never lost or destroyed or hurt. So even if it seems externally very tragic, we have to keep that confidence that that person in their relationship with Krishna is going to be, Krishna's helping them, moving them through that. So they weren't actually hurt.
But so I've been most of like chronically ill for like several years, and the advice that I've been given by many senior devotees, and Krishna keeps bringing again and again the same advice, is that all the calamities that Krishna puts his devotees through is to humble us and to make us realize that we can't rely on our own material abilities, on our material intellect, to think that we can control the situation. But then whatever calamities that we go through, they're meant to make us take shelter of Krishna and to really humble us, to realize like that we are nothing, and that we have to take shelter of Krishna, and that all of the calamities that any devotee goes through, although they might be so many different things, but it's there to really humble us so that we'll actually cry out to Krishna.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, opportunities to realize how helpless we are without Krishna. Another thing I was thinking is the time when Prabhupada, he wrote the whole manuscript to the Bhagavad Gita, right? He did all, you know, all his commentaries. He had it all ready. And then it got stolen in New York. Like, talk about a setback.
That was in India.
In India.
It was in India before he did it.
Well, the typewriter was in New York.
The typewriter was in India.
Okay, so his manuscript wasn't stolen in New York?
No, it was in India that was stolen. The manuscript was stolen.
The manuscript was stolen in India. Okay. And then when he came to New York, his typewriter that he used for compiling these was stolen. So he several times. But the manuscript, I was thinking about that one specifically. Because that could be, if that happened, one way of looking at it would be, oh no, that means Krishna doesn't want me to do it. Right? That could have been, like, what if Prabhupada had thought, oh, that must be a sign, I'm not going to do that. And then we wouldn't have had the Bhagavad Gita as it is that Prabhupada wrote. So it's very, we need the guidance of other devotees in these situations. If a door seems to be closing on us, it could go either way. It could be that Krishna wants us to turn right instead of left, right? Or it could be that Krishna wants to see our determination to serve him. And this can be really tricky, and it's like a whole other discussion. But when that does happen for you and you're confused about what it is, just take shelter of other senior devotees who can guide you in that process. Yes, Mr.
What does it mean to take shelter? Does it mean that you pray for the obstacle or distress to go away? Or does it mean that you just make yourself vulnerable and just tell Krishna, if you want to kill me, you can kill me.
We see those kinds of prayers, like in the Shikshashtakam and Queen Kunti, the latter that you were saying. But it really depends on our level of, we have to be real too. We can't be artificially advanced. Mm. Like if something happens to us and say we're struggling with a health situation, or we can't be artificially renounced in the sense like, okay, Krishna, I really don't care. You can keep piling it on me. If it's not genuine, then it can be troublesome because it could affect our faith. But what we need to do is also be very authentic with Krishna. If we're struggling and we can be real with Krishna and say, this is what I... Krishna's a person. We can pray to him. We can share our struggles with him while at the same time aspiring for something higher. So like knowing that the ideal would be to in an ideal situation, I would be appreciating this calamity. Thank you, Krishna, because now... But maybe I'm not at that level, right? So in the meantime, I can pray to Krishna in whatever way I can with that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so we have the ideal in our heart, in our mind, in our readings. We know what to aspire for, but at the same time, being real with where we're at. And maybe that takes the form of, oh, Krishna, I really just can't make it through another day. Can you please help me get through this migraine headache or whatever? But then knowing that ultimately we want to get to that place in spiritual life, that anything is okay, that Krishna can. Yeah. If anybody has any thoughts, yeah. When life is really difficult and then we go and stand in front of the deities and we see Krishna smiling, we can think about that, how we think this is so important, like Prabhupada says in here also, that we're having a nightmare, right? And there's a tiger chasing us. And have you ever woken up from a nightmare and your heart's racing for a while because you think, wow, that really, it's like your whole body was in that moment, you think it was really a tiger chasing you. And then you wake up from it and you realize, oh, it wasn't such a big deal. So similarly, Prabhupada's saying that our difficulties in this world, even though they feel so real and they are, we have to support each other empathetically, they are ultimately not, it's not really us, right? So things that happen to our body are not real in the sense that we shouldn't get too confused. We keep focusing on Krishna, chanting and looking at Krishna's smiling face and remember that what awaits us is so much better than this material world. I'll end there. Unless there's something pressing, but yeah. Thank you so much.